And welcome to the End Credits Radio Show here on CFRU 93.3 FM, CFRU.ca, Guelph Campus and Community Radio. I am your host, Adam A. Donaldson, and joining me today is...
Candace LaPage.
Vince Matson.
And Peter Salmon.
And this is our first show of 2018, but unfortunately Tim Phillips still couldn't be here. He's a very busy guy, and we, you know, it's important to have great consensus when handing out awards, and I feel like we're missing an important voice on our awards panel, but I guess we'll have to make do. Any thoughts?
I heard it was because of your cooties that he was not here. Why? What actually happened to Tim? Like, I don't...
Tim's gone. There is no Tim. No. No, Tim will be back when he's less busy, unfortunately. As for end credits, local movie show for local movie fans, are here every Thursday at 10 a.m. to talk the latest in pop culture and review the newest movies. This week, we're still recovering from New Year's, so we're recording this segment in advance to give out a few awards of our own. We've been talking the last couple of weeks about, you know, Golden Globes and Oscars and things and MTV Movie Awards and other stuff. Anyway, this is not the award show. We're going to give out Best Picture and Best Actor. We don't really care about that. We don't. You know, we're going to go for a different vibe. A vibe that I recently learned was incomprehensible to some people on the panel. But that's fine.
Listen, I couldn't even get the favorite Christmas movies right. You think I'm going to understand half of these awards?
Fair enough. It's your fault. we have four categories. This turned bitter fast. We have four categories.
L.A. Confidential is a Christmas movie, man.
Okay. The flashback. Kids revisit it.
Well,
Christmas
now that
episodes.
We're all bitter, I might as well just throw my hat
yeah.
in the ring.
Yeah, you know yeah, what I mean? Yeah. I know. I hear you. Anyway, so category one is something we're calling the anti-canon. So if canon is something we want to sort of keep and commemorate and rely on its importance going forward in our pop culture diet, the anti-canon is something we just want to be rid of. Like, whether that's like a movie franchise or movie, actor, director... Let's throw some people in the anti-canon, shall we? As it were. Why don't we start with Vince? Where do you sit on the anti-canon?
Well, for me, I think the world has already spoken about what it wants to do with this, but I would like the Dark Universe to be kind of gone. You know, I think the success or lack thereof of The Mummy kind of speaks for itself. We don't need any more. And I think, you know, people are generally in agreement with it, but that is my anti-canon. I think we need to kind of nip this in the bud.
Question. How much of this resentment has to do with the fact The Mummy was the first review you did on the show?
Like 99%. No, we're not going to dignify The Mummy with any more, you know, discussion, I think.
Yeah, I'll deal with The Mummy in a bit. Okay. But it's... That was so poorly... A lot of these things are so poorly handled. But the Mummy especially, they were really convinced that they had something here. And I'm not sure what made them think that, because the tone of the movie was all over the place. And I remember talking about this on a review. One of the most irksome things about it was that the film builds a romantic relationship between Tom Cruise and the two women in the cast, the Mummy herself, and this one of the scientists who works for... Prodigium.
And those were heavy air quotes, just in case you couldn't see it. Yeah.
But the romance was unbelievable in both cases. Yeah. And Tom Cruise being involved in a movie like this, I found like this should have been his wheelhouse, like blockbuster, him running everywhere. And it just like he fell down flat.
And a few weeks ago, you, Tim, and I all said that, you know, we would be up to see Guillermo del Toro like do it, you know, back when they offered it to him.
Right.
That would have been cool.
That's the irony in all this, is that Shape of Water is probably the best yes. Dark Universe movie yeah. released this year.
Yeah, yeah. Exactly.
Peter.
My least favorite, a type of film and a film that should just disappear is Geostorm, which I've talked about before. I hope the director doesn't do anything else. And I hope Gerald Butler goes on and does some more work, maybe. And for me, the main thing is it's a natural disaster film, and there's been billions of those, like 2012, and there's already so much of that. And the CGI wasn't, in my opinion, good enough for it to be even worth the fun of that. So yeah,
I'm so disappointed right now. Like, the natural disaster films are right up my alley. Now,
yeah,
I will admit I didn't get to see Geostorm because I think it opened on a Friday and closed on Saturday, which probably tells you a lot. But
we did have enough time to... I do wonder if this is another bitter resentment thing, because Peter was on the episode where we reviewed Geostorm. But if I recall correctly, I provided you with a number of options and you went with Geostorm.
I did, yes.
So...
I did.
So what he's saying is that's your fault.
No.
First it was my fault, now it's your fault.
We dug up some dirt on you.
You know, I did mention Geostorm in the next category we cover as kind of like a runner-up. But one of the things I will say about Geostorm is that it was, because it comes from Dean Devlin, who also co-wrote the Independence Day sequel. He wrote the original Independence Day, but he co-wrote the sequel as well. This was an improvement on Independence Day Resurgence.
Was it? Okay, good. Yeah. I will not see Independence Day Resurgence then.
Because I think there was at least some life in it. You know what? Yeah, Gerard Butler was the most unconvincing climate scientist you will ever see.
Yes.
I think that him and Jim Sturgis were the most unbelievable brothers in a movie you will ever see.
Really?
Gerard Butler, of course, being from Dublin, Oklahoma, and Jim Sturgis doing a passable American accent. But you know what? I did like the one scene with, I can't remember her name, Abby Cornish, as the Secret Service agent. She was so badass in that scene. And yeah. If one thing comes out with, like, spin off that character or create a whole new action character for Abby Cornish so she can go be badass in something that's not Geostorm. Mm-hmm. So I'll put that fly out there. Candace, anti-canon.
Anti-canon. So there was this movie that I tried watching the other day on Netflix because a couple of people had watched it and said some funny things about it. And I thought, huh, Anna Kendrick. Can't be bad. Do not watch this movie called Table 19. When I was watching it, I thought it might have been a Netflix original, because it was not that Netflix is bad, but they pump out a lot of films, so sometimes there's going to be bad ones. So I thought it was a Netflix original because it was just bad. And then I realized when I was looking through the list of films that came out this year, I'm like, oh no, that came out like in wide release in like January or February or something. I don't know if it redeemed itself because I couldn't finish it. I actually stopped watching it. Mm. First of all, it's a woman who has broken up with her boyfriend and so immediately goes insane, which I think is just something that needs to stop. It's just like, seriously, you know, we've all had these experiences where relationships have ended, and certainly, you know, I might look back at some of my behavior and think, well, that was so unlike me. But yeah, she's like setting fire to things. She's causing scenes. She's just being absolutely ridiculous. So I was like, I love Anna Kendrick, but even she can't make me want to care about her. And then she goes to the wedding of her ex's sister. This is the table she's at. She set up the whole wedding, dropped out of the wedding like 2 months before. Mm. It's just a horrible setup. And she's pregnant, we find out. And that's how they broke up. And I was like, that's it, I'm done.
Spoiler.
Off.
Yeah, spoilers.
I was going to watch Table 19, not now.
Yeah, sorry, don't do it. Yeah, so once this became like the reason why they broke up, I was like, no, I am having no part of this. Mm. Everything was already bad to begin with. And now you've just added this stupid, ridiculous extra thing where, oh, the guy, you know, wanted to get the abortion and she freaked out. And then, although he didn't want to get the abortion, he just didn't know how to talk about it. I'm like, get over it. I'll watch The Obvious Child any day over this.
Mm-hmm. Good. That's a decent film. Table 19. Mm.
And generally that really bad romantic comedy trope of women going a little bit wacky because they're single or they've broken up with someone.
I will see your women going wacky in a romantic comedy, and I will raise you women going wacky in a romantic drama. That's 50 Shades Darker.
Oh, God.
I did not see
you saw that?
I did. Let me explain. I did not see 50 Shades of Grey, but I have TMN at home, and I was just kind of like flipping through the channel to watch something, just to have something in the background as I was doing something else. And I came across 50 Shades Dark, and I thought, you know what? I'll give it a whirl. Big mistake.
You know, real porn is free on the internet now.
Where?
On the internet.
No, it wasn't even about that. It's just, you know, it's about, you know, when you're talking about sex in movies, especially American movies, it's so hard to, like, get real about it. It's so hard to, you know, see, you know, genuine, emotional, realistic depictions of sex. There's none of that in 50 Shades Darker. And again, I don't know about 50 Shades of Grey, but, like, I hate these people in this movie. I actively hate.
How do you really feel?
You know, Dakota Johnson, I feel she was fine. She did what was required of her. But Jamie Dornan as Christian Grey, like, I do not know what she sees in this jerk. He's not even just a jerk. He's kind of a bland jerk. He's just kind of, like, jerk by default. It's like he came out of the box in jerk mode and nobody knows how to get other modes. I have no idea. And the plot is about, like, how someone he used to have under contract as his submissive, like, is stalking him, and Anastasia, who's the Dakota Johnson's character, and, like, because, you know, he's obsessed with her, and this old girl is obsessed with them, and then Anastasia has her boss, he's obsessed with her too, and so it's like just this tangled mess of obsession and debauchery, and it's like, why are any of these people involved with each other? Like, if it was me, I'd get in a car and get the hell out of there. It's nuts. And I see nothing here that makes me understand the appeal of this world. And
but he's got lots of money.
He's got lots of money. So does Lex Luthor. At least you'd have an interesting time with Lex Luthor blowing stuff up and, you know, causing earthquakes to build more beachfront property. I don't know what there is to do with.
But, like, does he have a ball gag?
Oh,
Lex Luthor? I bet he does.
I doubt he uses it the same way Christian Grey does, though. But, yeah, I don't see the appeal of this at all, and I don't understand how millions of books... And I was doing a little bit of reading on this, and apparently Sam Taylor Johnson, who directed the original, was out because she was doing things that E.L. James, who is the quote-unquote author of the original books, did not like. And, it's just... the person who wrote the screenplay was E.L. James's husband, which, you know, just makes me think that this is, like, almost like a money-making scheme on there, but, like, they're exploiting the fans of the books, and they're just by doing the most bland, tepid adaptation possible, and that's fine. I don't understand how there's going to be another one of these coming out next year, but then it'll be over.
You won't be seeing it, is what you're saying?
No, I will not be.
It could be a lot better. Only one way to find out.
Well, I guess I'll never find out.
Put Lex Luthor in there, like we just said.
If there was a way, Jesse Eisenberg, Lex Luthor from Batman v Superman?
Yeah.
That would, oh my God, I think we're onto something. Anyway.
Copyright that fast.
Copyright. Does anyone own the rights to Lex Luthor? So this brings us to our most improved, as Peter implied. We could be marking 50 Shades Freed as the most improved next year. I doubt it.
I do not hold
your breath.
But this is something that movie or director or actor this year who we feel has done better than they have before, and we should be recognized and encouraging them in their better work. So, Peter, who do you think is most improved this year?
Well, I would say that the most improved is Patty Jenkins. Mm-hmm. I am not a huge DC fan whatsoever. Man of Steel was decent. Batman vs. Superman was... I did not enjoy that whatsoever. But Wonder Woman, and I was expecting nothing. I went in and I loved it. I thought it was great. A lot of fantastic actors that I didn't expect being on it. I thought Chris Pine... I'm not a Chris Pine man, but he did a really great job on it too. The visual effects, the fights, it was just really interesting, and I think a good progression towards what DCU can become. I think it could become, if it tries harder and goes towards better directors and the same style of Wonder Woman, I think it can get to the MCU level. Mm-hmm. You just gotta try a lot harder.
I'll come around to my comments in a sec, but Vince...
Well, I would be remiss if I did not mention Mr. M. Night Shyamalan Ding Dong this year.
Oh, yeah.
And for his wonderful, very surprising comeback, I would say, with Split.
Mm-hmm.
It came out earlier this year and sold, it was like number one at the box office for like 4 weeks straight.
Yep.
And I personally thought it was a great, entertaining film. So my pick is M. Night Shyamalan. I think he confirmed what I already know, which is that he is actually a good storyteller and a good filmmaker. And I'm looking forward to
Glass.
Yes.
That was a surprise. That was a real surprise. And I when I saw Split, I know that the real life multiple personality disorder is nothing like how we kind of see it in movies.
Oh yeah, of course.
I thought the way it was handled in this was really well done, with the way James McAvoy played the character was really well done.
Yeah,
and it really got it back into like that kind of magical realism that Shyamalan was working with, like in Sixth Sense, Unbreakable especially. I think Unbreakable is still his best. He has yet to surpass that. And will he do that with Glass? I don't know, but I am, for the first time in a long time, eagerly awaiting an M. Night Shyamalan movie.
Agreed.
Yeah. Candace, most improved.
My most improved went to a film that nobody really thought wasn't going to do well to begin with, but I think it did a lot better than I expected it to. So Guardians of the Galaxy 2 was, you know, the second film in these franchises often, you know, they just do the same thing again, or it's not, you know, things just sort of fall apart often around the second film. And I think that this one actually was better than the first one. I enjoyed it more. I think that they covered a lot more interesting stories in it. They really got to be a little more emotional around certain things. And, you know, there's the daddy issues. but there was a lot of real heart there that came out, which I think was great. The one thing particularly in Guardians of the Galaxy 2 that I think was most improved was Baby Groot. So at the end of the first film, of course, we see the little Baby Groot and everybody went crazy. And it's been, 2 years since that film came out, and you could get like dancing Baby Groot, like
I have one.
Dashboard things, like all these things. People were crazy over Baby Groot. And I was like, come on, guys, this is ridiculous. And so then the trailers come out and everyone's like, oh my gosh. And then I saw it and the stupid dance scene to ELO's Mr. Blue Sky. And I was like, oh man, he just got me. I fell for it. Damn you, Baby Groot. Smaller, stupider Groot.
That is a great opener, where it's the battle is going on in the background and you're just following little baby dancing Baby Groot. Yeah. I like that a lot.
Yeah.
I'd have to see Guardians 2 again. I was not completely sold on it being better. And then when I saw Thor Ragnarok, I thought Thor Ragnarok kind of out-Guardians.
It did, yeah.
Having said, I thought Guardians 2 was a good movie, and it managed to expand that universe in a way that was like natural and played up on the themes introduced in the first part, especially involving Yondu, Michael Rooker's character, who gets probably the best line in 2017 involving another Disney character. he's great. And there were consequences to it, which I think is something that's left out a lot of these comic book movies, is that, you know, there was a consequence to what went on in the movie, and the characters, you know, suffer because of that. And it was really great, and I hope that Guardians being wedged into Infinity War doesn't, you know, ruin the specialness of those characters, because I think they have benefited from being separated from the rest of the goings on in the universe.
It gave a good look into like what else is in the universe. Like, there's so many interesting things in space in the MCU, different planets, things like that. So I'm a little disappointed they're just going to be coming back to Earth, and I hope in Infinity Wars. I hope it doesn't ruin the Guardians of the Galaxy, like what you were saying.
Yeah, I was glad that they didn't come back to Earth in the second one, because I when I was covering Nerd News, I know they were talking about shooting. Well, no, they weren't talking about it. They were shooting scenes for it on Earth, which, as you learned, is part of the climax. and part of the very first scene. And I was like, oh my God, they're not going to come back to Earth. That is so lame.
Yeah, like
and
the visuals and CGI of Kurt Russell's planet was so remarkable. Yeah.
Well, the visuals and CGI of Kurt Russell were mind blowing.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
That was,
I was glad him and Goldie Hawn, his wife, got the both made a lot of moolah this year.
Yeah.
Deserved it.
Yeah, they've, it's been a good couple of years for Kurt Russell with Bone Tomahawk and this, so. Yeah. Anyway, for my most
anybody that knows his beard and the thing knows he does not need CGI
okay. for the beard. Yeah, that's right. my most improved following Peter actually is the DCEU because Wonder Woman was a vast improvement, and I know nobody in this room had the moral fortitude to come on the show to review Justice League, so I had to outsource that. But I think Justice League was a step in the right direction. It wasn't perfect by any stretch, as you would expect a movie basically reshot three times with two different directors to not be perfect. But I left Justice League smiling, which is more than a lot than I could say about Batman versus Superman or Suicide Squad, for that matter, where you're kind of like grasping at straws. Well, like, at least Ben Affleck's a good Batman, or at least the Suicide Squad itself was well cast. I found myself genuinely enjoying Justice League and Wonder Woman, of course. I know that was a tough review, our first review, for you and Jenna, but I think just the fact that we got a female-driven superhero movie by a female director, and that it was a huge success, that was, and the cultural outreach that created, and the fact that the movie was as good as it was, perhaps not as good as it could have been, but as good as it was, that it was made for a very powerful moment this year.
Yeah, you can't discount how important that film was. I totally agree with that. And, when I say that I didn't like Wonder Woman, it's because I just don't like the DCEU.
Mm-hmm.
And while the Wonder Woman film certainly improved it, making it a perfect film to put in this category, it still didn't improve it enough for me to it's still not my DC.
Fair enough. I think there's room to improve, and of course there's big questions now about is Affleck still going to be Batman, and is are they going to start again from scratch, or they're shaking up the back end, and what are they going to do? And but I think one of the things that is forgotten at all this is that Marvel, we'll get into this in a bit too, that the Marvel Universe wasn't what it was. That Marvel Studios did like about 10 years of market research where they made things like the Thomas Jane Punisher and Elektra and Affleck Daredevil and Fantastic Four 1 and 2, that they weren't all hits. And I think they thought that they would just throw all these things out there and they would be instant success. And I think the fault, given what we've seen with both Wonder Woman and Justice League, is that the fault was kind of with Zack Snyder. And I know that personal issues, deeply personal issues, sort of took him away from post-production. But I think these movies will go further with his absence. I think he was kind of, it's so much as he's a really great visual stylist, he does not understand what is at the heart of these characters. And I think that was very evident from both Wonder Woman and Justice League, the finished Justice League. I don't know how it would have looked like if he had finished it, but I have a feeling the box office wouldn't have been that much different, because I think Joe and J&Q Public saw Zack Snyder film on the movie posters and thought, no thanks. But I wish more people had seen it, because, like I said, I did find myself enjoying it more than I thought I would. Justice League, I mean. Any regrets about not seeing Justice League, Vince?
No, not yet. I don't know. Zack Snyder might call me up, offering me an opportunity. But until that day, no regrets. I'm sorry.
Yeah, zero regrets here.
Yeah.
All right.
I like Ben Affleck. I'll check it out. And Wonder Woman.
So, can we still share a mic? I don't know, man.
all right. We'll take a break there. For our little musical interlude this week, I thought maybe a little old-fashioned CanCon. little something from 2008. So here is apropos, Nothing Special, and that is a song from Il Scarlet from their nascent days. Yeah, I know.
Il Scarlet. Oh my gosh.
I know. You're about to hear Il Scarlet on CFRU, and it's Nothing Special, I guarantee. You are listening to End Credits here on CFRU 93.3 FM, CFRU.ca, Guelph Campus and Community Radio. I'm sick and tired of everybody.
Coins have chosen you five. Now you must protect the Zeo Crystal and life on Earth.
Because we are the Power Rangers?
He's smart.
I'm sorry, is this some kind of joke? Like, I'm standing here with a wet wedgie, my socks are soaked, we're squishing around and we're talking to a wall. I mean, guys.
Silence!
Sir, I'm detecting elevated heart rates. They're very scared.
I think we were all very scared with the sight of Elizabeth Banks as Rita Repulsa in Power Rangers. And that was what that clip was from. Power Rangers, the reboot from earlier this year, based on the classic kids series from the 90s. And that leads us into our next category, which is time to retire. So trends or film series or actors and filmmakers who should just give it up. And so my pick was movies that announce their sequels in advance. Because if you'll remember back before the release of Power Rangers, Hiram Saban, who I'm not sure if he owns the rights to Power Rangers in North America or he owns Power Rangers in general, but he comes out and he says, guys, we're going to do seven Power Rangers.
What?
Oh, yeah. And he's like, it's going to be so great. You're going to love this movie. It's going to do so great. We already got six more ready lined up for you. We're going to introduce Green Ranger, and then it's going to be gangbusters. It's going to be great. And then, of course, Power Rangers comes out, and nobody cares. And it makes kind of, shows you the limitations, I guess, of studio market research that, at one point they're making seven, and then the next day it's one and done. But, going back to what Vince said about the Dark Universe, that's another one where they had, like, the Dark Universe logo, and they had Prodigium, and, they were all ready to go with Jekyll and Hyde, and they did this, one of the Hollywood trades, the Hollywood Reporter, I think, they had, like, Dark Universe coming, and they did, like, this super swank photo shoot with Sofia Boutella and Russell Crowe and Tom Cruise, and then two people who had been announced as monsters, Johnny Depp as the Invisible Man and Javier Bardem as Frankenstein, even though those movies were not on the books for release yet. But they were ready for the photo shoot. And, that on top of, all the DCEU stuff, I mean, I've lost track of all the stuff Warner Brothers has announced this year. We talked about the Joker origin movie that the Hangover guy and Martin Scorsese were working on.
Yeah, what happened to that?
That's the point. It's, they've got Batgirl, they've got Batman, they've got Justice League Part 2, they've got Shazam, they've got Gotham City Sirens and Suicide Squad 2 and Flashpoint. And it's like, well, what's the point of all this when you release, to go back to Justice League, and maybe not tanks, but it doesn't do well. So, have we learned that lesson this year, that maybe to focus on the one movie and put it aside and then wait to see what the audience reaction is before we go to the next part? Or, is this 2018 going to be another year where it's like, not only do we have this movie, but we've got a trilogy plus two spinoffs, and we're ready to go with this.
Yeah, even what James Cameron's doing with Avatar, it's like, I have no doubt that those will be good movies, but it's hard to get excited about three. And especially when they're like 4 years apart, it's like, okay, I get that you have your plans.
To James Cameron's defense, though, that first movie did make like almost $4 billion.
Fine, but it's like, you know what I mean? I'm just saying, I'm not even sure what it is about his plan to make like three or whatever. I feel like that's maybe just a trend that's starting maybe more than I'm picking on Avatar.
The reason
maybe,
it's
if taking, I can backtrack a bit.
The reason it's taking him so long for Avatar 2 is because he's using his new underwater vehicles and things to film like 90% of it underwater.
Oh, really?
So he's trying to make it. That's his thing, right? He likes science and working on new technologies and equipment as much as he does films. So he, you know, he puts them together. That's why it's taking him so long.
Like I said, I have no doubt it'll be good. Yeah. I feel like that's just another example of that trend.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you're right. I do want to give a shout out to Darth Montgomery, though, who played the Red Ranger in Power Rangers. I feel like, you know, at the end of the day, which role do you want to be more known on for from 2017? Like Red Ranger or the D-bag older brother of Max on Stranger Things? It's a tough call. I don't know. Anyway, what do you think of Darth Montgomery?
I have no idea.
All right, so we'll go back to Vince. What do you have for what was our category?
Time to retire.
Time to retire. Thank you. I'm the host.
Well, I say this out of pure respect, but I believe it's time for Tom Cruise to maybe like step down from these kind of roles that he's doing. And we reviewed American Made, and we both mm-hmm. liked American Made, mm-hmm. but I don't know how much longer he can keep it up, and it's like, why not just step behind the camera? Why not do a Mel Gibson or a whatever, Robert Redford, and start telling stories from that perspective instead of, you know, you racing furiously down a street that's being demolished.
Yeah.
It's just... I don't know. Again, I say this out of respect. I feel like his best times were when he was doing the auteur stuff, the Magnolias and the Born on the 4th of July's, and now he's kind of doing the Jack Reacher thing, and I just think it's maybe time.
You know, it's funny, you know, going back to Magnolia, I felt like that he was making that pivot. He did, like, Jerry Maguire and even when did Magnolia, and I felt like he was making that pivot, but then, no, he keeps going with the action stuff. Mm-hmm. And to go back to American Made, he was still jacked. He was ripped. And if you go and look at, I can't remember the name of the guy, is Barry, I think. Barry something. But if you look at his picture, he's not a Tom Cruise yeah. double ganger. That there was no call. Like, he could have let himself go for a couple of months. Not like put on weight because he's got to go and, you know, hang from a plane or something for Mission Impossible again. But, you know, he doesn't have to have a shirtless scene in frickin' American Made, since the original guy was not what we'd call a human specimen, is what I'm saying. Not to body shame people, but there you go.
But you just did.
I just did. Well, Barry's dead. He's not going to matter. It's their mind. It's
exactly, yeah.
Yeah, so. Yeah. Peter, who do you hate this year? No. Who should retire? What should retire?
Probably a lot of things. This might offend some people, but I am really, I'm done with all the MCU post-credit things. Like, I'm done with, I know I can see why a lot of people think they're fun, but I'm done having to sit for like an extra 20 minutes just to see something. So it was Deadpool especially that I lost it. It ruined it for me. I've seen Ferris Bueller's Day Off. It was just some remake of something I've seen, and there was no hint at what's going to come up next. So that's one. I think Dwayne The Rock, I love him. Well, I don't love him, but he's okay. I think Dwayne The Rock should maybe chill out a bit.
I actually hate him.
Do you? Okay. He's been in like so many films. He's got Jumanji coming out. He's got like another Godzilla one next year.
Rampage.
Rampage. He was in the Fate of the Furious. He's
Presidential Run. Don't forget.
Yeah, Presidential Run. He's just in so much. And I think he should maybe chill out a bit. You guys might have changed my mind on it because I haven't seen it, but I think there is maybe, not maybe, there's way too many reboots and remakes. But a lot of the time, like it, you know, current kids aren't going to be able to watch the old one and enjoy it. Mm-hmm. It just, it doesn't, you know, it doesn't look fresh and new. So I can sort of see it, but I do think their reboots and remakes are kind of taking control of Hollywood, especially blockbuster films.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. The end credits thing, not the show, the post-credits, not our show, that is interesting because I thought Spider-Man Homecoming had the best one.
Yeah.
And I guess maybe the thing where Captain America's doing the PSA, like, sometimes you got to be patient. Sometimes things don't pay off. That was, I think that would might have been a good place to leave it on.
Yeah, if the teasers were like that part in the credits, that'd be okay. But right. Waiting to the very end, it's too much.
Fair enough. Candace?
All right. Well, so I also have a couple of here. So the first one is very similar to what we've already said, but really, like, the DCEU and Marvel superhero movies, come on. So we had, what, 3 official Marvel movies come out this year, 2 official DCEU movies come out. There were 3 new TV shows from Marvel, too, right?
Yeah.
Like the Inhumans, Is The Gifted actually part of...
It's part of the X-Men.
Yeah, like...
And Supergirl and Flash and Gotham.
Yeah, like all the other ones that are already on there.
Don't forget Runaways.
And the Runaways, that was
and
the
Iron
one that
Fist.
I had with the 3, like, Marvel television shows. Yes, and then all the Netflix. It's just like, okay, like, this is not... It's not novel anymore, which is fine. I mean, maybe, you know, comic books come out every week, some come out only monthly, but like there's a ton of comic books and it's not, as it turns out, it's not actually an art form that's dying. People thought it was for a while, but I don't know that we need this many movies and TV shows about that. And not because we don't need that many, but I feel that it's making other movies not get made because we're just doing those. Now, on the other hand, unfortunately, some of those other movies that do get made are movies starring Johnny Depp, who I think needs to just stop. Just, there is no need for Johnny Depp ever anymore. One, he's become problematic. Mm. There are some issues potentially with his personal life that make him just maybe not the right person to cast in a lot of things. But on top of that, like, Johnny Depp stopped playing any character besides Johnny Depp in like 1987, right? Yeah. Like, you don't need to cast him in anything. Furthermore, did anybody need a new Pirates of the Caribbean movie?
I didn't remember about that film until this second.
Yeah.
So, no,
yeah.
I don't think anyone
I think they
it.
Were, what, at 5
I'm going
or
to say
something?
No.
Yeah.
I didn't even watch. I watched the first one and went, well, that was all right.
And I liked it, but I was a kid, right?
Yeah, but then, like, I didn't watch the next 4 films.
Even stuff like Black Mass, where it's just, like, touted as, like, Johnny Depp's going back to, like, the serious, like, awards contender roles. And it's not even about the actual story of what the movie is supposed to be about. It's all about this, the politics of the roles that he's choosing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And he looked like a White Walker in it.
Stole the words right out of my
mouth. Yeah, Johnny Depp. Of course, there was Warner Brothers and J.K. Rowling had to release a statement recently to deal with that. So it's like it's coming, it's catching back up to him.
Yeah.
I think one of the reasons he's escaped Me Too so far is because there's only been the one accusation coming from his last ex-wife, Amber Heard. And I think there hasn't been a new accusation yet. And of course, that seemed to be, I mean, I think that seemed to be also be a deeply personally troubling relationship
yeah,
between
well, and of
the
course,
two of them.
Not that I'm excusing either behavior, but there is a difference between domestic violence and sexual violence.
Right.
I mean, often they go together, but sexual harassment of a coworker is very different than domestic violence of your partner.
Exactly. So yeah, it's not surprising that this kind of caught up to him. Again, and yeah, it was kind of surprising that it was, I guess, so bad that everyone involved in the Fantastic Beasts production had to release a statement of affirmation. But yeah, I mean, it's only going to get worse. And of course, there's, you know, 12 months between now and when that movie comes out. So who knows where we'll be at this time. But
J.K. Rowling stated that she is going to keep him.
Yeah.
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 So I'm curious if it'll make as much money as the first one.
Yeah, I mean, I didn't mind Fantastic Beasts, but I don't think it's enhanced by Johnny Depp doing his Johnny Depp thing as Grindelwald. But
I do think there will be a blowback. I think there will be an active campaign for people to not go see it.
Which is fair.
Well, yeah. But it's also a self-inflicted wound, too.
For everyone else in the film, that's the only issue, right? It's the same with Baby Driver. Yeah. You know, not as many people are going to buy it now on Blu-ray and DVD just because of a singular person in it. So it's too bad.
Well, that brings us to our last category for the evening, and tip your waiters. That's the most promising. So something in 2018 we're looking forward to, whether that is a particular performance or a particular movie. Vince, why don't you start us off there? What are you looking forward
to? Sorry, I thought the category was worst Tom Cruise shirtless scene. I'll be on one here. No,
actually, it was worst performance by Tom Cruise as a cadaver.
Narrows it down like a lot for me. I appreciate it. For me, it's unquestionably what Jordan Peele did with Get Out. I think I'm just really looking forward to seeing what he's able to do. And I know he's involved now with the Twilight Zone reboot, which I'm really much, very much looking forward to.
Is that from Apple?
I'm not sure, to be honest. I just see his name popping up with it. But I was so surprised by how much I enjoyed that movie that Jordan Peele is the one to watch for me. He's the most promising.
Yeah, and I'm glad he's not doing an Akira live action. Akira. I'm not sure how serious those discussions were, but Twilight Zone feels more his speed because I think Get Out
feels like an elaborate
Twilight Zone. That's right. Peter.
So for me, I thought most promising, I was going with actors. So for me, one of the most promising actors, and we were talking about him in Get Out, is Daniel Kaluuya. That was like a small role, but he was famous in Britain for Through Skins. He's going to be one of the main characters in Black Panther, and I think that's going to pick him up, and people are going to pay more attention to him as like a singular actor and not just the person in Get Out. I think him, and I think he already sort of is famous, but I think Oscar Isaac, 2018, 2019, his name will just be like, you know, like Tom Cruise or something, just well-known to everyone. Inside Llewellyn Davis, it's what made him famous. And now in Star Wars especially in the newest one, he's kind of taken over the role of Han Solo. He's the comedic one that everyone – that's tough but smart, and everyone's going to love him. And everyone in the theater laughed at him and thought he was great. So I think he is definitely going to be a well-known name by next year.
Well, he's in the first scene in both – The Force Awakens and Last Jedi, and that the opening scene in Last Jedi, as well as being an awesome action sequence, is really, really funny.
Oh yeah,
let's not forget his dance sequence in Ex Machina, which let's be honest, stands
so
up
good.
To like the best of Fred Astaire. Like, you know what I mean? Yeah.
I wish him and Domhnall Gleeson would be in at least one scene together in the Star Wars films, because I picture them as Ex Machina.
That's a great point. That is unusual that they should. Hopefully by the end they'll be in a room.
They become roommates.
Yeah.
And then how do we work Alicia Vikander into this? She's going to be a bounty hunter or something. I don't know. Candace.
So I couldn't narrow it down to fewer than two. So I've got two. One is the director Taika Waititi, who did Thor Ragnarok. I had seen What We Do in the Shadows. I hadn't seen his film before that. I can't remember.
Hunt for the Wilder People.
Thank you, Hunt for the Wilder People.
Which is awesome.
Yeah, but I enjoyed What We Do in the Shadows, and then Thor came out, and it was just like, wow, you took this huge blockbuster and really made it your own, added clearly your own flavor to it without making it necessarily leave the world that it existed in, and it was just refreshing. Everything was, it was just really, really great. So I'm excited to see what he does next outside of the the thing to retire, which is all of the comic book movies. And then on the theme of Get Out, my most promising out of that actually is not Daniel. How do you say his name?
Kaluuya?
Yes. Sorry, but it's Lakeith Stanfield.
Yeah.
So he played the one other black man.
Oh, best bud.
No, the one who was at the party.
The one who
was
who says the signature line.
Gets the picture
taken. So I sort of was interested in him in that role, but then I watched Death Note, mm-hmm. which had its ups and downs, but he was very much an up in that. I thought he was a standout performance in that film, and he was just very, very interesting. And not only that, I've read some interviews with him, and he's a kind of wild person.
Well, that helps.
Bonkers, a little bonkers. he speaks in analogies and deep things. It's like, well, this. I'm really interested in seeing what he does next because I think it'll be really good.
Yeah, people seem to like actors that are a little eccentric like that, like Joaquin Phoenix and Daniel Day-Lewis and things like that.
Yeah. And once Johnny Depp.
Yeah. Well, of course, Daniel Day-Lewis is retiring after Phantom Thread. So
I forgot about that, yeah.
So we need a new Daniel Day-Lewis. Maybe he can learn shoemaking and cobbling and fill the void of the actor cobbler. my most promising. I'm looking forward to two movies this year, and I always like looking for things that, you know, aren't sequels and part of franchises, and that's getting harder and harder. So I picked out... one of these is kind of broadly part of a franchise, but I'll go with the other one first. The Meg, which is basically Jason Statham versus a giant shark, mm-hmm. a giant prehistoric shark.
Hmm. Is this put out by Asylum?
No, it's from... not actually. It is John Turteltaub, who directed the National Treasure movies. Hmm. And it's based on a... I think it's based on a novel, but it's about a Chinese team of researchers and under the ocean, and they're under attack by what is the name of the creature? Carchardon Megalodon. So it's this big 70-foot giant shark, and the only person who can save them is naturally Jason Statham. And it's got an interesting cast. It's got Ruby Rose, it's got Lee Bang Bang, and Rainn Wilson. So I don't know if this will be peak Statham. But
you won't be punching the shark in the nose like bare knuckles.
I got my fingers crossed. It's like, hey shark, you want to get into this like men? I'm gonna get my car and you're gonna follow me. I don't know if that's gonna happen, but I hope
you
it
just
will.
Won the best Jason Statham impression award.
Yeah,
2017.
Finally, yeah. All that hard work's paid off. And then my other one is Spider-Man Into the Spider-Verse, which is an animated Spider movie that is coming from Lord and Miller, who are responsible for Lego Movie and Cloudy with a Chance of Meatballs. So they come from an animated background, also from 21 Jump Street. That was their work as well. But I'm kind of excited about this. I mean, we haven't had a big screen. We haven't had too many big screen superhero movies that are animated. I think Big Hero 6 is probably the last one, and I did enjoy that a lot. But I'm very interested to see in terms of what they can do, not just what Phil and what Lord and Miller can do, but with what an animated Spider-Man movie can do versus a live-action Spider-Man. If maybe there is a way that character can be portrayed on the big screen that can be done in a little bit different way. Animated versus live action, and of course the focus of that movie is on Miles Morales, who is a I believe he's Hispanic and African American, a young kid in the comics, and we don't know too much about it. They just released a little teaser for it, but I'm very excited. It's Shameik Moore doing the voice. I don't know if you guys have seen Dope.
I have.
Yes.
No.
Love Dope, right?
Yeah, it's great. Anybody listening should go see it right now.
I agree. So he's doing the voice of Miles Morales. It's got Mahershala Ali as his uncle, Liev Schreiber in a role that has not been assigned, at least publicly. I can only imagine, though, that he's probably playing the villain, mm-hmm. Because why would they keep a lid on that? But I'm very excited to see that for all those reasons, and I think it'll be a really great family movie for next Christmas, and I'm looking forward to that. Also, Mary Poppins comes back next year.
Speaking of reboots,
yeah, Mary Poppins The Return, starring Emily Blunt. Dick Van Dyke's also back for that, which is interesting. He has a role in that of some...
Intriguing.
Yeah,
I'm curious what that's going to be like. Will he be playing his original character?
That's a good question. I'm not sure if he's like the older version of Gus the Chimney Sweep.
Yeah.
I guess we'll have to wait and find out. I don't think they've released a trailer for that yet. I mean, it's still over a year before it comes out, but
I hope he's a bit better to British accent this time.
He said 50 years to prepare. Mm-hmm.
I will say on your animated comic superhero movies, mm-hmm. I am pretty excited about Incredibles 2 coming next year too.
Oh, I forgot about that.
Yes.
Yeah. That should be. I mean, that's kind of the movie that launched Pixar, isn't it?
Well, Toy Story.
Oh, well, yeah, forget about those ones because I didn't actually enjoy them. I know. Really? I'm like the only person in the world.
Oh, interesting.
Yeah, I love them.
Question. Did you enjoy in Toy Story 3 when they are about to die in a fire?
I didn't watch Toy Story 3 because I didn't enjoy the first one all that much, so I never bothered to see the next ones.
Okay.
Which is weird as a Joss Whedon fan. Mm-hmm. Yeah. I didn't get Toy Story.
I'm just curious because I think they use whether or not you cry at that scene as a test for psychopathy now.
Oh, I'm sure I'm a psychopath. It's fine. It's fine.
Or the scene at the end when Andy is...
When he leaves them with the little girl.
Yeah.
I'm gonna start tearing up just
I cry at E.T., right? I'm good.
E.T.?
Yeah. The part where he dies, except that he's not actually dead, and we all know it, and yet I still cry? Definitely.
Spoilers
I'm
for E.T.
I'm good.
35 years ago. Anyway, before signing off, I do want to shout out to our co-host, Tim Phillips, who couldn't be here. I mean, he helped make... we didn't do a full year of end credits, but we did... a solid 7 months of end credits. So, and he was a big reason for that and a big reason for our success. So thanks, Tim, wherever you are. We appreciate everything you did, and we look forward to having you back. I also want to thank Jenna Gare and Ian Rogers, who Jenna was here at the beginning. Unfortunately, life took her other places, and Ian was in town for the summer but loved the show and wanted to be a part. So, you know, I thank them for the time they put in on the show. They were a lot of fun. And I want to thank our occasional guest hosts. Well, they one occasion, but we had Amy Chopin to do Justice League. Eliza Crossland and Mary Lalonde were here to do The Disaster Artist last month. And thank you guys, for undertaking the adventure and for sticking it out. And it's been a lot of fun so far, and I look forward to keep doing it all this year because we're now in 2018. Right.
Mm-hmm. I'm enjoying 2018. That's fine.
Yeah. Yeah. thank you, Adam, for having me on the show. I will say that I have definitely watched a lot more movies this year than I probably would have.
Good.
Then... And I even enjoyed most of them.
Amazing. I appreciate that. And that's one of the reasons that I wanted to start this project. It's, you know, it's hard. It's easy to sort of get yourself motivated and get more engaged when you're reviewing stuff on a weekly basis.
But I think what to take away from this episode is that we should see Geostorm. Isn't that what what we said?
Yeah. Everybody see Geostorm.
Right?
Yeah. Okay. Yeah.
Cool.
Geostorm.
At Tip,
rent
if you can.
Rent it. I think for a number of years too late for that. I also just want to thank the gang at CFRU for their support, Christopher in programming, Andrea in outreach, who is a big fan of the show, I know, and station manager Fichkana. And thank you to you, the listeners, for tuning in and for downloading every week, however you listen to the show. We appreciate it. So we're going to call that a day for this edition of End Credits. You can find us at our website, endcreditsradioshow.com, or at Facebook, End Credits Radio Show, or on Twitter, End Credits Radio. Let's go around the room. Vince, how can people find you on the internet?
Facebook, Vince Masson.
And Peter?
Mr. Towerak on Twitter or YouTube.
And Candace?
You can find me on the internet at CINN48, that's CINN48. And also, please do listen to my other show, which is the Village Podcast from the Bookshelf Downtown.
I love that interesting
grunt.
You too can listen to it, Peter.
They have the internet on your phone now. Anyway, we'll be giving out some more awards later today on Open Sources. We're doing our annual award show at 5 p.m. Me and Scotty Hertz. That's also on CFRU. You can find me on Twitter and Instagram at Adam A. Donaldson or code2guelphpolitico.blogspot.ca. Stay tuned for more great programming here on CFRU 93.3 FM, CFRU.ca, Guelph Campus and Community Radio. We will be back next week for another new review here on End Credits. We will see you next week at 10 a.m. And Happy New Year, if you haven't already been told so far by this point on the fourth day of January. We'll see you guys later.